web platforms are great. They allow third-party developers to build apps that use our personal data. But web platforms are scary. They allow third-party developers to build apps that use our personal data. When you go to Facebook.com and access one of these apps, you don't know who the developer is. As a result, you can't determine if you should place your trust on this app. These developers may be malicious, they might not care about security, or they might just not understand security. But even if they do understand security, and even if they care about your security and they're not malicious, we can't trust the apps they build. And the reason for this is because the way we've been traditionally building web apps, at least secure web apps, it's just been a very difficult task. So let's consider how we build a secure web app nowadays. We'd probably take the MVC approach, so frameworks like Ruby on Rails or Django all implement this paradigm. And this paradigm is built around the idea of breaking your app into three different components, three different functionalities. For one, we have the model, where we define the interface of the data. In this case, it would be, say, Jen's profile information. In the view, we define how to render pages. And finally, in the controller, this is where we tie everything in. So we take a user request, invoke the view and the model, and produce an HTTP response. But how do we do security? So say we just want to implement a very simple policy. Only Jen's friends can access her email address. Well, we'd scatter if statements throughout the view and the controller, intertwine all this policy code with application code, and this is a big problem. First, it's error prone. It's also not scalable. If at a later point we want to change the policy, well, now we have to go and reason about the application logic and the policy that's intertwined between. What do platforms like Facebook do to help the web security problem? Well, they give you a pop-up box. So you can decide if you want to use this application at the cost of giving up your privacy, but you get you get this added functionality, or you could just not actually run this app at all. The problem is that all they're offering us is a way of deciding whether we want to let the app to access the data or not. Once the app has access to your data, you can't control what it can do with it. So for example, the game you were playing last night that said it was using your email address just to keep track of scores probably sold your email address, and now you're going to get spam. So the question we have, and the question we want to answer is there any hope for having privacy on a web platform? And there is, but we have to change the current model. So in the current model, app developers are hosting their own applications separate from the platform. And if you as a platform, say Facebook, want to enforce some security policy, the way what you're limited to is essentially writing a clever terms of service agreement. Instead, we propose a new model, where we host the apps on the platform itself. So we already trust Facebook with our data. We trust Facebook to actually launch the application we want to execute. So let's host the apps on this platform. As a result, we can leverage the fact that the apps are on the platform and enforce security using security mechanisms like information flow control. And this is exactly what Hails does. So Hails is a web platform framework, and in Hails, we take security seriously. So security policy is explicit, and it's first class. What this means is that you're no longer intertwining your security checks with your application logic. Instead, security is specified in a single, concise manner. What remains the same between existing platforms and a Hails platform is the fact that users still need to trust core platform components, but apps are actually untrusted. So these apps that are using your personal data are not trusted, and we can make sure that they use your data safely using language-level information flow control. We enforce that they always abide by the policy. So a lot of other systems have tried to do this. For example, Aeolus, Highstar, Nexus, GIF, EuroWeb, and so forth. They're all very interesting, very great systems, but they have some limitations. For one, some of these don't have a guide for how developers should structure their applications. The second and big one with information flow control systems is that policies are just very hard to specify. You usually have to be a security expert to understand and specify a policy. Some of them, like GIF, are actually not even appropriate for dynamic systems like the web because they use a static enforcement mechanism. And things like Highstar and Nexus require us to install a new OS, and if we're just a web developer that wants to implement a web platform, well, this is something that requires a lot more traction than we're willing to give up. So what are our goals with Hails? Well, for one, we want Hails to be deployable today. We want web developers that are not security experts to actually use this system. And we want the system to be scalable for building extensible web platforms. And what I mean by this is we want to be able to specify one policy and have this policy be enforced across multiple untrusted applications. In order to do this, we have to extract out a policy. So we're proposing a new design paradigm called the model, the policy, and the view controller. And in here, policy is specified alongside the data model. So when we think about policies, we're thinking about the data it's trying to protect. So what we're saying is specify your data model and specify your policy alongside. What this means is that now you're no longer intertwining a policy code in the view and the controller. So we essentially have a split of the worlds. On the one side, we have models and policies. And here's where we specify the data model and the policy on this data. So users of a Hails platform do need to place some trust in the model and policies that they use because they're the ones that actually mediate access and handle this data. But because Hails enforces policy globally in an end-to-end fashion, we don't need to place trust on the viewers and the controllers. And here in the viewer and the controllers, this is where we actually implement the UI and all the other intricate and complex app functionality that is actually most commonly a buggy. So to some degree, you're placing trust on the security expert on the left, but letting all the other developers who are not security experts to implement the really cool functionality. And the way we enforce that the policy specified and the model policy is obeyed by the viewers and the controller is using information flow control. So when we think about information flow control, the way we specify policies, this is very different from the way we might do it nowadays on the web. Namely, we're thinking about where data can flow. So the wrong thing to specify is that this app can't read Jen's email address because it may leak it to Eve. The right way to think about it is where data can flow. So we can allow this app to read Jen's email address as long as it only reveals it to her friends, namely Jen, Alice, or Bob. So the way we enforce information flow control is by first associating a policy with the data and having this policy follow the data throughout the system. And then when the app performs, say, an HTTP request, well, we have the runtime system intercept and check that this policy won't be violated if we're going to allow this communication. So we built a real system using information flow control in the MPVC paradigm. The system is called GitStar. It's a source code hosting website built around GitHub. It's very similar to GitHub, but it's different in one core way. For one, it's a platform. So what this means is all the functionality on GitStar is implemented using untrusted code. So all the functionality, such as the project manager, the browser, are all untrusted apps. And on GitHub, everything is one monolithic piece of code. In fact, GitStar only provides two things. The first is a model and policy that specifies the data model for projects and for users. And of course, the second part of that model policy is the actual policy. So we specify a security policy on the project. So for example, we enforce that only collaborators can actually modify project data. The second thing that GitStar provides you is a view and a controller that lets you manage project and users. So here, you go to the website and you can actually modify who your collaborators are, or who the readers of a project are, and so forth. But the rest of the website is built by third-party authors. So the code viewer, the wiki, and so forth, they're all untrusted code. In fact, actually, the VC that I mentioned, the project manager, is also untrusted code. Even though we wrote it, we don't trust it. So if you're another developer and have a better way of doing project management, well, we're going to take your viewer and controller and actually just deploy it on GitStar. OK, let's take a closer look at what these model policies are and what the viewer and controllers are. So if I'm a platform developer, the way I'm going to specify a data model is in terms of collections. A collection is just a set of documents, and a document is just a set of field value pairs. So in this case, we have the user collection. We have this way of specifying data, a data model. Well, now let's specify a policy. So we specify a policy for each document. More concretely, we can specify policy at three different levels. We can restrict who can access a collection, who can read and write from a collection. We can restrict and impose access restrictions on documents. So for example, we can say that only Jen can modify her profile information. And even more fine-grained, we can specify policies on fields. So for example, the email field might be a sensitive piece of information, and we'd like to specify that only Jen and her friends can read this email address. Now, the important thing to note here is I'm telling you about readers and writers, but this is enforced mandatory. So it's information flow control. We're thinking about the actual syncs, not necessarily who can immediately access this piece of data. Now, one thing worth noting about these policies on collections, document, and fields is that policy composes. So in order to read a document, for example, you must be able to read from the collection. Let's take a more concrete example and actually go through a policy and how Hails enforce it. So here we have Jen's profile information. It contains the user, email, and list of friends. And we're specifying that the only principals that can read the email address are Jen, Alice, and Bob. And this is all on top of the Git star user model and policy. On the bottom, we have an untrusted VC that implements the functionality of an address book. This was implemented by Eve, and it's malicious in trying to leak email addresses. So now when Bob goes to the website, and Bob is Jen's friend, he invokes the address book, so he sends an HTTP request. Now the address book might might perform an HTTP request to Eve's remote server to get some data, and it is at this point where the Hails runtime system steps in and asks the question, is this allowed? Will any information be leaked by allowing this communication? And in this case, it's not, because the address book hasn't read anything sensitive. So we're going to allow this. Because the address book is still wants to be used, it's going to implement the right functionality, so it's going to look up Jen's email address. And again, at this point, when the address book invokes the git star user MP, well, we're going to check again, is this an allowed thing to do? And since the address book still hasn't read anything sensitive, we allow it. Now, the git star MP takes this query and fetches the document. So this document, as I mentioned before, now has a policy because we're associating a policy with every piece of data. And when it replies back to the address book, it gives it Jen's email address, but this email address now has a policy associated with it, and it follows through whatever code path address book provides. So now when the address book wants to reply back to Bob, we can inspect this policy. So in order to answer the question, is this information allowed to flow to Bob's browser, we're going to check the policy, and the policy says that Jen, Alice, and Bob can read this information. Where is this going to? Bob's browser, so this is completely fine. But address book is malicious, so it might also try to leak the email address to Eve's spam server. And at this point, we perform the exact same check. Is this information that has the policy that only Jen, Alice, and Bob allowed to go to Eve's spam server? No, it's not mentioned in the policy. As a result, it can't be allowed. Okay, now one question that remains is, how do we specify policy? One thing that we've learned with git star and more from building like other platforms, like a blog platform, is that web apps in general, the data models already encode a security policy. For example, the document here on the bottom encodes a notion of ownership and a relationship between users. So what this means is we can actually enforce and specify a policy in terms of the data itself. So for this document, we'd want to specify a policy that only the user named in the document can modify this document. We'd also like to specify that only the user named in this document and the list of friends also named in documents can read this email field. Okay, so this is quite new when we compare with, say, systems like Hystar, where you actually have to specify this more manually. And we allow you to actually specify this pretty much in a piece of code that fits on one slide. So this is the full policy for the user model, for the user data model. So first, we want to specify who can access the collection. In this case, we're not imposing any restrictions. So anybody can read from this collection, anybody can write to this collection. Now the question is, how do we access documents from this collection? And we specify that the user field is actually just a key, so it indexes the documents. But here's the interesting part. We want to specify that only the user can modify the document. So how do we do it? Well, this is a function from the document, so lambda.doc says that doc is the argument, and it's a function from this document to a set of readers and writers. Who are the readers? Well, we're not imposing any restrictions. Anybody can read the fields in this document. But we're restricting who can write. And we're restricting who can write based on the information in the data. So we're going to take the user value and named in the document and set that the only person who can read is actually, in this case, let's say, Jen. And similarly, we can specify a finer-grained policy on an individual field in the same way. So it's a function from the document to a set of readers and writers. In this case, we're extracting out the user from the document and the user's friends from the document and creating a list of disjunctions. So Jen, Alice, or Bob can read this piece of information. One thing worth noting here is that the writers specifies anybody. In other words, we have no restrictions on who can write this specific field. But I mentioned before that policies compose. And we already specified in the document policy that only the user can actually modify this document. So there's no need to impose a more strict, a more restrictive clause for the actual field. Okay, so far we've seen how we specify models in terms of documents and policies in terms of restrictions on the actual fields, documents, and collections. Let's take a look at views and controllers. So what is a view and controller? Well, it's simply a request handler. So it's a function from an HTTP request to an HTTP response. It's very simple. But it implements very complicated things. So the viewer and controller are actually where we implement the core app functionality. So here's where we're going to actually implement the source code browser, the blog editor, and the wiki functionality and so forth. Now, in implementing the functionality of the application, one thing we need to do is get at persistent data. And the way we do this is by invoking an MP. One thing we don't need to worry about when we implement a VC, a view and controller, is that the runtime system actually implements, enforces the security, so we don't need to worry about putting if statements that abide by this policy. So it's a runtime system that enforces policy, and when we're implementing VC, we don't have to care about it at all. So from a security point of view, the model and policies are where the interesting things are happening, and they're specified in a concrete uniform way. And in the viewers, we might implement very complicated functionality and actually have tons of bugs, because that's what usually happens when you implement a renderer. But we don't have to worry about that because the policy is enforced by the Hails runtime system. But what are other implications of this MPVC paradigm? Well, for one, as a user, when you go to gitstar.com or any other Hails platform, you can choose these views and controllers simply based on functionality. So if there's there's already a data model, well, then you can just choose the best and the most interesting app that works on this data. For developers, what this means is that now that if there's already a model and policy that the users are using, you can just build your app on top of this. So models and policies are completely reusable. And this is what we did in GitStar. So in GitStar, we initially specified a data model for projects and a policy on these projects. And then we built two completely different applications using this same model and policy. One is the code viewer, which invokes the GitStar project model and policy to get at Git blobs. And all it does is it takes the raw blob, contacts Google to get a syntax highlighter, and applies a syntax highlighter. The wiki, on the other hand, is a completely different application. It takes the same data, but now only from, say, the wiki branch, and instead of giving you the raw source, it's going to apply markdown and generate a pretty page. Now, one thing that's worth noting is that these were completely different applications, and the only time we actually cared about security was when we designed the MP. Does anybody know what's technical difficulties? I don't think anything's changed. That's fine. I don't. Gotcha. Okay, we're back. Okay, so what about the implementation of Hails? Well, there are two components. First, there's the Hails Haskell library, and then there's the runtime system also implemented in Haskell. We chose to do it in Haskell because we can implement information flow control at the library level. So what this means is that now Hills is actually just a Haskell library, and if users give us feedback on what they like about the API and what they don't like about the API, well, we can change this API and actually release a new version of Hails and with a much quicker release cycle. What it also means is that developers that are using Haskell to build web applications, they can use existing tools. So if you've already been developing apps in Haskell, well, you can use the same thing that you were using to test your app, but just apply it to Hails now. Another thing is with information flow control, at least language level systems, the backwards compatibility is somewhat of a burden. And doing it in Haskell, we can already leverage a lot of the available code. So if there's, for example, a library that takes just text and applies Markdown to convert it to HTML, we can use that library. And this is exactly what we did for the GitStar Wiki. We just imported a library called Pandoc, and just started using it. We didn't have to modify the library in any way. The Hails runtime system is the component that provides the actual implementation for an HTTP server, and it's this HTTP server that invokes the main viewer controller request handler. And finally, equally important, in addition to having an HTTP server, is enforcing information flow control. So because the HTTP server is the one executing the viewer and controller request handler, well, we can use language-level information flow control to confine this untrusted piece of code. So I mentioned that one of the goals is to actually have Hails be deployable today and usable by developers that are not security experts. So in order to test this, we got responses from about 5 developers using Hails to build GitStar apps and also their own platforms. One of them was actually a high school student. She managed to implement a full platform that was implementing the functionality of a multi-blog. One thing that we found out was that not only is MPVC needed it wasn't just necessary to extract a policy to enforce it across multiple different apps, it actually simplified the way developers were thinking about policy. So now the separation of policy and application code has let, say, even the high school student reason about the policy on a whole platform, not just locally within one single file. In addition, a lot of bugs that are just common in, say, views and controllers, in Hails, they don't render as vulnerabilities. So if you remember maybe 5 months back, when GitHub had a very popular vulnerability, it was the mass assignment bug. So what this let users do was essentially update a project, an existing project, and add their SSH keys to it. And in fact, we looked at our own code, our GitStar VC code, and other developers' viewer and controller code, and we were writing code in the same fashion. So had we not separated out the policy and used information flow control, this would have been a vulnerability. But in Hails, it turns out to be pretty much just futile. Now, Hails is still in development, so we are lacking the scaffolding tools and webcast tools that, say, Rails and Django have. But this is clearly very, very doable and something that we're undertaking as future work. Another thing that was somewhat negative in the response was how to write policy. So in an earlier version of Hails, we didn't have the earlier policy specification language that you saw. And as a result, these developers were writing code that turned out to be actually buggy because it was just much harder to express policy. We took this feedback and implemented a policy that you saw earlier. And as we've asked them for feedback on the new way of writing code, and they found it to actually work out much better. Okay, the second evaluation was performance. So we want Hails to be deployable. Now, if it's very slow, nobody's gonna use it. So we measured the performance using a few micro benchmarks. Here we have Pong, which just measures the web server performance, the table, which dynamically generates a table, and database reads and writes. The y-axis here is just the throughput normalized to Java Jetty, which happens to be blazingly fast. The main takeaway here is that Hails is considerably faster than Sinatra, which is a Ruby platform, a Ruby framework that a lot of people are using, which it in turn is actually considerably faster than Rails. So the main takeaway is that actual performance numbers and the performance of Hails shouldn't be a setback in adapting Hails. To conclude, I'd like to remind you that current platforms simply ask users to decide between functionality and privacy. In Hails, we obviate this. The way we do it is by hosting apps on the platform, giving policy a first-class role, and enforcing policy in a mandatory fashion using information flow control. Moreover, Hails is actually a real system, and we've used it to build gitstar.com, which was our case study, so you can check that out and download Hails from hails.io, or if you already write Haskell code, well, you can just install Hails with Cabal install. Thanks, I'll take any questions.
And then from you. Great work. Based on my understanding to the traditional mandatory access control model, it seems so it's very difficult for the application programmers to use or to understand the security model, right? So it seems in your paper you're trying to address this challenge by using MPVC, right?
That's correct. So that was actually one of the motivations. It's very hard to.
Yes. So how do you prove your approach could deal with this challenge very well?
It's pretty much just the feedback. So we've asked developers, and all the developers we've had are actually one not information flow control people. Mm-hmm. So there are like two guys in the room that understand information flow control. And these guys also didn't necessarily even have a lot of web experience. Those that did had Rails experience, and they found it that, one, it was a lot easier not having to forget about that one if statement that will break your whole system.
Right.
And two, they were more or less spending 80% of their time in working on the view and the controller, not the model and policy. So once they got that down to 20% of the work, the rest was just building an app the way they normally would. But actually, even easier.
All right. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Jonas Wagner from EPFL. And first of all, I really think this is very useful. And I wondered how it would, or what would be the obstacles in applying it in a setting, for example, with Ruby on Rails or with Python. Because these are very open languages and there are no things like private variables, you can get around those restrictions, and it would be hard to enforce this privacy without modifying the language runtime or something. So do you have thoughts on that?
Indeed. We've thought about these other languages. One of the reasons for using Haskell is because we have a control of side effects. Now, to do it in something like Ruby on Rails, you would have to modify the compiler at least. On the other hand, well, there's something that we talk about in the paper, and that's being able to call into untrusted executables. So, for example, if you want to still implement your view and your controller in Ruby, you can do that and just use Hails kind of as the glue for these platforms. Does that answer?
Yes, definitely.
Thanks.
Hi, Peter from University of Toronto. For your performance comparisons,
yes.
You were highlighting the difference with Sinatra, and I was just wondering, was Hails compiled with GHC, or were you running it with Hugs? Or
no, similar? Hails was compiled with GHC.
Oh, thank you.
Sure.
Okay, thanks very much again.
Okay. Sorry.